Mickey couldn't make it. Anyway, with a sobriety day of 583, Mickey B.
Hi everybody, my name's Mickey Bush and I'm an alcoholic. Probably an addict. I identify in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings as an alcoholic and probably an addict, because in Alcoholics Anonymous that's the way we like it done. When I share in Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous, as I often do, I identify there as an addict and probably an alcoholic, because that's the way they like it done. See, and it doesn't really matter to me. Mickey Bush puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. At any given time, that's what it's likely to be. You know, that's where I'll, or a mouse turd. Do you ever feel like you're out of place somewhere? Whoever feels like they're out of place? Yeah. I always do that. I always feel weird, out of place, like a bloody turd on a wedding cake or something. All right, look. I always send me mum tapes and shit like that. She lives back in northwest London. I'm a limey lush and loady, by the way. This is the way I talk. Alcohol didn't do this to me, you know. So now, look, on the count of three, I want you all to say, "Hi, mum." All right, because I'm going to send a tape back to me mum. Is that all right? Right. One, two, three. "Hi, mum." Yeah, there, she'll like that. She'll like that, yeah. She'll like that. I was on the phone to her yesterday. She's 80 years of age. I'm 6,000 miles away. And she still says to me, "Don't you get cheeky or I'll hit you with me stick." Yeah, it's still the same. Still the same. I always hear weird shit. Who's got that ability to hear things that are not said or to hear them said differently, you know? I always did. Everybody kept calling me nuts and insane, said I was crazy, because I used to hear things differently to what they were said. Weird. Weird. Everybody always thought I was weird. And so I would hear things said weird. See, I do lots of weird shit anyway. Who else does weird shit? I did it this morning, picking me toenail. The little voice in me head said, "If you pick that, it's going to hurt and bleed." What do you think I did? What do you think happened? Then I chewed on it a while. You ever chew on a toenail or something and slip and bite your tongue? Get all pissed off, you know. I've always done weird shit. I'm just weird. That's all there is to it. I'm weird shit and hear things weird. My mum. Do you know mums are funny? My mum's 80 years of age, right? And she's like, she doesn't relate to us, you know. She doesn't relate to us. But, you know, mums are weird. I think they really do have eyes up their arse. You know that? I would come home from school and my mum would be cutting potatoes or vegetables at the sink. I'd say, "What's for dinner, mum?" And she'd say, "Get upstairs and take off your school clothes. Put your old clothes on." And I would go, And she'd say, "Don't poke your tongue out at me either." And she never turned round. I mean, how do mums do that? You know? And that never improved as I got on. Fast forward to like when I'm drinking. We had stairs going up to our bedrooms and my mum would sleep with one eye open and the door open. Always by the bedroom, by the door, by the steps, you know. And I don't hear things the way people say them. And like, I come home one night, I particularly remember, I chipped up the top of the stair and she called from the bedroom, "Drunk again, son?" And I said, "So am I, mum." She said, I ain't drunk, I've been in bed since 8 o'clock. But I hear shit weird, see? I've always done that. Fast forward again to when I'm getting sober. I just got sober and I don't know nothing about working and getting a job. I've been a bloody superstar. You know, I don't know from, like, work. I certainly never obsessed over that. And I'm riding on the bus. I had to get a bus. I had a little sports car in the garage, but he hadn't ridden for 3 months and wasn't likely to either. To get a bus, I don't know how to ride buses and shit. I'm on the bus and all of a sudden it jerked away. And I fell right against this chick's boobs. She went, oh, like that. She said, move your hands. I said, sure. See, I don't know. I hear shit weird, see? I didn't know from that shit. And that's what happened all my life. People kept, like, you know, just doing weird shit. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a total alcoholic. Everything about me is alcoholic. It's not just a part of me alcoholic or a big part of me that ain't alcoholic. I'm all alcoholic. See? Everything I say, do, think and feel is alcoholic. See? I don't even know from the term drug of choice. I never even heard the term drug of choice till I came here. I can assure you nobody out there ever used the term drug of choice when I was drinking and using. Did they you? I cannot imagine being backstage at a Led Zeppelin concert and someone coming up and saying, hey dude, what's your drug of choice? Mick, got some good shit here backstage, let's go. Got some. Certainly not, my drug of choice is Jack Daniels, for Christ's sake. Never happened. Never happened. I don't know from drug of choice. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a total alcoholic. I always drank alcohol. I never remember not drinking alcohol. But I didn't only drink alcohol. I always drank it, but I didn't only drink it. I did mountains of drugs. Mountains of drugs. Anybody here ever do drugs? Yeah. No shit. But if there's any alcoholics in the room, real alcoholics, specialists, I don't know if there's any specialists. I'm a chemical gourmet, me, but if there's any specialists here, real alcoholics, and I know it's Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I don't want to offend no one, so I want you to know that I did all my drugs alcoholically. All right? I don't know how many people, it looks about 300 or 400 people in here tonight. Is there anybody in the room that did just and only drink alcohol? 1, 2, 3, no, he's picking his nose. 4, 5, 6, now there's 400, 7, 8, anybody else just drank alcohol? 8. 8 out of 400 ain't very many. And if we all left, you'd be very bloody lonely. I don't know from drug of choice, but I always drank alcohol, and I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it. It's more exciting to me today than it's ever been. 12 years sober. Just celebrated 12 years last month. And I'm here to tell you that, like, 12 and 12 gets you 12. I'll guarantee it, yeah. Yeah, I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I just love it. I love being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, it's by far the most important thing I do on a daily basis. You know, I keep feeling like, oh, look, there's bits of shit coming through the ear, look. There is, there's a hole up here. Can you see it falling on me? Well, why the fuck didn't you say nothing then? There is a solution. I thought I was just tingling for being in here, you know. I do that. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I just love it, man. I just love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I always have, right from the get-go. I've always loved. I'm one of those guys who piss people off because I loved it from the very first meeting I ever went to. From the very first meeting I ever went to, in my conscious knowledge, I loved it. I was immediately attracted by Alcoholics Anonymous, I swear to God. I'd just come out of a two-day blackout. Any other blackout drinkers here? And the rest of you lying mothers. I can tell... I'd just come out of a two-day blackout. My best friend, who's known me all my life, just X'd me out of his life. Piss off, he said. I know it won't happen again because I won't be in your company when you're drinking anymore. I said, what? I couldn't believe it. I'd come out of a two-day blackout, you know, same as every other blackout I'd ever had. Just like the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I love this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I love everything about the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. You know that? I love the touch of it and the feel of it and the, you know, just the colour of it and the size of it, the name of it. I love everything about it. I love people who say Alcoholics Anonymous a lot. Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. I love that. I love the way it sounds. It has a ring to it. I just love it. Alcoholics, well, the way I say it, the way you bloody foreigners say it, I don't know. You lot speak funny, not me. But I do. I love this book, Alcoholics. And just like the book says, paid, P-A-I-D, pitiful and incomprehensibly demoralized. I come out of another blackout, pitiful and incomprehensibly demoralized. Never ever came out of a blackout happy, joyous and free. Never ever came out of a blackout doing something nice for somebody or, you know, heading up a charity show or giving a kid a toy or never ever came out of a blackout with more money than I started with, you know. There's always been a robbery in my pocket, you know what I mean? God. Full of guilt, shame, remorse, anxiety, fear, worry, loneliness, apart from the separateness. Anybody relate to any of that shit? No shit. Feelings, man. I don't know what to do. I come out of the blackout and I'm all like this and my skin don't fit. And do you think I ever came out of a blackout with plenty of dope left? And I don't know what to do and I'm just... And my best pals visiting me from Spain, know me all my life. We came out of the Second World War together, like robbed and cheated and lied and screwed our way around the planet a couple of times, done bank robberies together, been in and out of jails together, and like he's here visiting from Spain. Calls himself an international businessman. International crook is what he is, but anyway. I call him up. He's pissed off. He says, piss off. He said, I ain't going to put up with you anymore when you're drinking. I couldn't believe it. Threw the phone down. There was another dude who'd been hanging around. I didn't really know. I'd known him a long time. He was an English rock and roll singer. I'd known him a long time. But I remember, you know, he wasn't a mate of mine. He was somebody who hung around. And I thought, well, I'll call him up. And I'd call him. What do you think he's doing? He's laughing at me is what he's doing. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm a delicate dude. I don't like being laughed at. I call him up, and he laughs. Big belly laughs. Ha, ha, ha. I said, what are you laughing at? He said, you. I said, why? He said, because you do weird shit, that's why. I said, what do you mean? And he laughed again. Oh, he said, have you spoke to your pal from Spain? I said, yeah, he's pissed off. And he laughed. Got fed up with it, I did. So we keep laughing at. He said, I ain't had a drink for 2.5 years. I said, ain't you? Why is that? He said, because I used to drink like you. I said, what do you mean? I don't know, he ain't had a drink for 2.5 years. I never take no notice of no one else. Just me. All the time, me, 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 me. I may not be very much, but I'm all I think about. You know? And like, I don't know, he ain't been drinking for 2.5 years. And he's laughing at me. He said, you don't remember what you got up to last night, do you? I said, no, what? And he laughed like you wouldn't believe. Oh, I said, look, will you cut this out? I said, what happened? He said, well, it all started after you peed in that lady's dinner. I said, what? He said, don't you remember your friend from Spain took us to that Smart Beverly Hills restaurant? He said, and in the middle of the restaurant, you got all ticked off at that old, old lady. And you got up and whacked it out, ranted it right in her spaghetti. Oh, my God. And I didn't remember peeing in no lady's dinner. But I was in a blackout and I didn't remember and I didn't know about that shit. And I would do shit like that. And then I'd go back in that restaurant the next day or sometime. And they say, oh, how the hell you got the balls to come in here after what you did? And I go, what do you mean? And I wouldn't remember. And they'd say, get him out of here, lock him up, you know. And they would, they'd keep locking me up and throwing me in insane asylums and shit. But you know what they never did? They never once come and got me and dragged me off and threw me in a nut ward or something and said, we're locking you up for repeating the same behaviour and expecting a different result. They never once said that. And yet it happened over and over and over and over again. And here I am talking to this dude laughing at me. I went, oh, I better call you. Now, I tell you what happened. I'm sitting at my coffee table. The beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous is sitting there and a meeting guide. And I don't know where it's come from. I don't know whose it is. I know nothing about this. I'm living in West Hollywood. I'm a hipster. I thought I was like a hip happening dude. What the hell's Alcoholics Anonymous got to do in my life? I don't know. But there it is sitting there. And you know what? I do believe that that's when God was doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. Because I can promise you, my best thinking did not get me to AA. That's a lip-flapping, party-line bullshit statement. There's a lot of that lip-flapping shit. Don't clap on your own, someone will throw you a fish. Sorry. That's 12 years sober. I can promise I did not come out of that blackout and say to myself, self, your life is a mess, you better go to AA and sort the bugger out. No, I didn't do that. One of you chaps had been 12-stepping me. This chap I just called was 12-stepping me. I never knew he was 12-stepping me. I never knew nothing about nothing. I thought I did, but I didn't. And you know what? I looked in that meeting guide and there was a meeting just down the road on San Vicente Hill that I could walk to. This was in West Hollywood. I was living in West Hollywood then with all the other hipsters. Well, I don't know whether you know West Hollywood or not. It's in Los Angeles and it's a special part of town. Some people call it Boys Town. For those who are not initiated with what I mean, it's the kind of town where if you drop your wallet on Santa Monica Boulevard, you've got to kick it up to Sunset before you can pick it up. You know what I'm talking about. There was a meeting down on San Vicente Hill and I walked down to this meeting. Well, I walked down to this meeting, I don't know what I'm doing, I don't know where I'm going, I'm just nuts. And there's two dudes standing outside. I know they're greeters today. I didn't know it then. Two dudes standing outside stuck out their hand. Said, welcome. I said, what? They said, welcome. I said, what do you mean? They said, keep coming back. I said, what for? He said, "We love you." I said, "I bet you do." Got me a cup of coffee, sat me down on a window ledge. There were loads, it was a small room with like two circles going around. Sat me down. I don't remember what went on at that meeting. I was too into my head. I can't remember what was going on. I just remember talking to somebody. But do you know what happened at that meeting? You guys told me I was alcoholic. The beautiful book, don't say we don't tell people we're alcoholic. It says we prefer not to, which is a totally different thing. You guys told me I was alcoholic. I said, "What?" I said, "Alcoholic." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "That story you just told me was describing a blackout." I said, "What?" He said, "We call that a blackout." I said, "No, I wasn't. I wasn't in no blackout. I don't know what it is, but deny it anyway, just in case." See? I know that today it's a disease of denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. Got it? So here's a man who knows all about it, and he's telling me I was in a black. I said, "No, I was awake. I was doing shit." He said, I said, "Blackout, idiot, not pass out." I went, "Oh." I see, I didn't know you did shit in a blackout, like travel. I came out of a blackout once walking down a street in Spain. From London. I went out drinking in London, came out of a blackout in Spain. You know something's happened when you walk, come out of a blackout and you're walking down a street and there's lovely sunshine and palm trees. Ain't none of that shit in London. Oh, hi Spain. I don't know, this guy knows all about it and he's telling me I was in a blackout, I'm an alcoholic. You guys told me I was alcoholic. I went, "Wow, alcoholic. Far out. That was great, alcoholic for Christ's sake." And now I knew what the hell was wrong with me. I never knew what was wrong with me. They kept locking me up. I didn't know. I wasn't nuts and insane. I was alcoholic. It's a dude telling me I'm alcoholic. Alcoholic. I went, "Far out." Alcoholic was like a step up for me. I could picture putting out a resume. Alcoholic. It was great. Alcoholic. Far out. I went home and told my pal. I said, "Guess what? I'm alcoholic. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable." He said, "No shit." When I admitted I was alcoholic, all that actually did was make it unanimous. Never did nothing else. People think doing the first step is about admitting they're alcoholic. I've got news for you. If you think you've done a first step by saying you're an alcoholic, you're missing the deal. Doesn't say that. Anyway, you guys told me I was alcoholic. I couldn't, I was, oh man, it was great. Alcoholic, that was great to be alcoholic and I loved it. And I tell folk today they're alcoholic. I don't give a shit about their feelings. I don't care. I got three recovery houses in the San Fernando Valley. Every day I stand on the firing line. Every day I see this disease. I don't... Some of you troops are in here tonight, my guys from the houses. Yeah, I don't mess around. Bloody alcoholic. I go on the same premise as you went with me. You said if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because it's been taking some shit and thinks it's an eagle, screw that. You're a duck. Yeah. Seventh edition. So I was glad that you told me I was a duck. Man, I loved it as well. I loved it. And you know what? Alcoholics Anonymous, in that meeting, there were some celebrities in that room that I knew and some happening people. It was great. It was great to be an alcoholic, man. I loved it. And you know what? Sit the fuck down, will you? Come on. Bending over like that with big fat arse in the air. You know what happened on that very first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous did for this alcoholic? See, what happened was the magic that happens in these rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, where one alcoholic talks to another alcoholic. That's exactly what happened for this alcoholic. You guys and the magic that was here worked for me, and you broke through that big bad barrier, that big facade that I had up against the world, protecting me and protecting you from me. See? Look at that poor little hunchback, look. Did you see? Sick motherfucker. You'd think he'd be hiding with a shirt like that on, wouldn't you? Yeah, my friend, that's exactly what happened. That magic that happened in that room. It did. Never happened anywhere else. I'd been ostracized from society. They couldn't get me to do what they wanted. They'd lock me up in padded cells. They couldn't get me to do what they wanted. They'd chain me down on 5-point restraint. They couldn't get me to do what I wanted. They'd beaten the crap out of me. They could. We had that Rodney King thing here a little while ago. I know how he felt, Rodney King. I've been in Rodney King's position several times. I've had the man beating on me with a stick. The cop beat me with a stick one time. With a stick, he broke my arm. As I put my arm up like that to protect myself, he snapped my arm. And with the other arm, I went, fuck you! They could not get me to do what they wanted, and yet this disease got me to do what it wanted just like that. Just snapped his fingers and reeled me in like a fish, because I'm powerless over this deal, man. Just kept on and on and on, year after year after year. And you know what, you guys, you said to me, keep coming back, we love you, keep coming back. And you just reached in and touched that inner person inside. And you just wrapped your arms around me and gave me what I'd been looking for all my life. Just a hug and a cuddle and a love. And you said, we love you. I love that. And I did keep going. And you know what you also did? I've been an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous from day one. From the very first day. And I never knew what I was doing, but I was being active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know what? When I got home, two of you dudes had given me phone numbers. And I didn't know what the format was or what to do, but I had two phone numbers. And I called one of them. I was in action straight away. And this guy, I saw him here today, but he was too far away for me to get to him. And he's here now, the guy who responded to that phone call. And you know what? I called him up. And I said, I don't know who you are. I said, but I got a phone number here. He said, oh, I remember you from the meeting today. I said, oh, what's the scoop? He said, well, we go to them meetings. I said, you go to them meetings all the time? He said, yeah, go to them meetings all the time. I said, you going to a meeting tonight? I said, because I'd like to go. He said, no, he said, I'm not going to a meeting tonight. He said, I'm going to go to a movie. I said, how long have you been doing this thing? He says, 4 months. I said, holy shit, 4 months. Oh, all right, don't matter. Because I felt little now. Do you ever know what it feels like to feel little? Or just little, you know? And he went, wait a minute, he said, what am I saying? 4 months sober and a newcomer wants to go to a meeting and I'm saying I'm going to a movie? He said, wait a minute, where do you live? I'm coming round to pick you up. I said, really? He said, yeah. And he did. And do you know what? He's still 4 months ahead of me. took me to a meeting, got me one of these beautiful books, Alcoholics Anonymous, that I love so much and learnt so much from. Love this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I started on this path and it was great and I loved it. And I loved being a member. And I knew that it would work for me because the first meeting I ever went to, I walked in that meeting and the guy who was leading the meeting was an English rock and roll singer I knew, and I knew he was insane. I knew he was mental. See? And I said to him, what the hell are you doing here, man? You're mental, you are. You ought to be locked up, you did. He said, I'm 22 months sober, he said, and like, welcome to AA. I went, holy shit. So I knew it worked for nutcases like me, because he was nuts and he was 22 months sober. I went, wow, and it was great. It was great, and I loved it, and I kept coming back. I never had no higher power as I understood God. I never had no God of my understanding. Never even knew what that was. God of my understanding. Never had a clue. The God of my understanding wasn't of my understanding at all. It was somebody else's indoctrination of their God into my head since I was that big. And it hadn't worked because it was a fearless, punishing God. Wasn't a loving God like I could walk in the sunlight of the Spirit to. And you guys said, let go and let God. I said, what? You said, turn it over to God. I said, what? You said, pray to God. I said, what? Are you nuts? If I pray to him, he'll know where I am. I've been ducking God for years. I had this vision of this Tsar of the Heavens God that was out to get me. All my life he was going to get me. They kept telling me I couldn't do nothing with that God that I had. Threatening, punishing God. I couldn't even play with the old ding-a-ling. They told me all them nuns and shit, you play with that, you'll go blind. God will strike you blind, you play with that. Well, you know I did anyway. When I found out how good it felt, I thought, well, I'll risk one eye. But you guys taught me, see, and gradually over the period of time, that all changed, but not in the beginning. Now, that was on January the 15th, 1983, was that first meeting, January the 15th, 1983. But I told you I celebrated my birthday last month, May 8th, see? May 8th was my first birthday, it was my birth date, because that's the day after May 7th, which was the last mind-altering chemicals I did. See, now I never drank from the very first meeting I ever got to, and still haven't, not from that day to this. Not a drop has passed my lips from that very first meeting, and I never went to the meeting to quit drinking. I never had no desire to quit drinking. I'd never ever tried to quit drinking prior to that, to my conscious knowledge, and so it works here anyway. You see, this thing works even if you don't understand it, and that's my experience. But I was so sick when I got here that I didn't think I was sick. Now that's really sick. In fact, I was so sick when I got here that even after I'd been here for quite a long time, I thought, well, I'm not as sick as some of them real sickos. And for 4 more months, I'm still doing dope. Because I do lots of other shit besides drink, you know. But I never drank, and it was alcohol and alcohol and Alcoholics Anonymous. And I never drank from that first meeting. So I was doing all right. I was doing great. I loved it. I thought it was, oh man, it was terrific. But the guy who 12-stepped me was a singer, and he'd been out on the road. And he came in 6 weeks later. Now I'm 6 weeks sober. He comes to that meeting, and he's really sort of hurt. And he looked at me and he went, Mick, what happened to you? I said, what do you mean, what happened to me? He said, like, well, they told me that you was, like, doing good. I used to phone from the road, he said, and they told me you was going to meetings and doing great. I said, I'm doing great. 6 weeks sober. He said, what? I said, I'm 6 weeks sober. I ain't had a drop for 6 weeks. He said, what are you on? I said, nothing. He said, you can't be like that on nothing. What did you do since you got up this morning? I said, the same as I do every morning. What? He said. I said, I woke up. And I lit up a joint. He said, what? I said, I always smoke a joint as soon as I wake up. He said, you can't do that. I said, what do you mean I can't do that? He said, it's a mind-altering chemical. I said, no, it ain't. It's pot. He said, what a dick, keep coming back for Drysdale. I said, screw you, it don't mean pot. I like pot. Anybody here smoke a little pot?
Yeah.
Anybody smoke a lot?
Yeah.
No shit. I don't got a problem with pot. Pot only does two things to me. Makes me horny and makes me hungry. No problem with that. Well, some mornings you wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. But apart from that... Well, for the new folk in the room, I want you to know, 12 years later, I'm a changed man. Don't eat pizza in bed anymore.
Get me one of the coffee pot, please.
I didn't think I had a problem with that, so I carried on doing it. Beautiful book tells you about it, though, and the guys that break my balls sometimes for talking about some of this shit in meetings, you know, I just tell them what's in the book. I just tell them, go and read your book. One guy with 29 years knows the book backwards, breaking my balls, telling me about talking about things other than alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. I said, I only quote what's in the book. He said, what are you talking about now? I said, what's on page one? Go and read the book. He said, I know what's on page one. It's Bill's story. I said, that's right. That's where it is, right there. He said, what are you talking about? I said, look, here it is. Here lies a Hampshire grenadier who caught his death drinking cold small beer. A good soldier is now forgot whether he dies of musket or by pot. He said, it don't mean that. I said, it does to me. Pot means pot. You asked anyone what pot means, pot means pot. He said, keep coming back. I said, I intend to. But I don't only drink. I do lots of other things. I like speed, crystal, crank. Anybody here do a little speed, crystal? Anyone do a lot? Did it make your dick disappear too? Oh, I could fire up a bunch of gear and go and talk. Talk to you lovely ladies. Might as well have said to you lovely ladies, you want to come home and we'll talk about sex. There's no chance of getting any. Oh, disappearing dick, yeah. I used to like cocaine. Anybody here do a little cocaine? Anyone do a lot? Yeah. Do anything for cocaine except pay for it. Don't like paying for it. I used to like hallucinogenics too. I don't know about you, but that hallucinogenic shit takes a lot longer than one day to get over, I tell you. Woo! Flashbacks. I used to like dope. Anybody here do a little dope? I want to do a lot? Yeah. I don't care if I nod out on you. Or puke. I'm a puker. I'm puking. I'm a directional puker. I could hit your damn foot from here. I'm Mick from Phoenix. Look. Scottsdale. Tara. God, I used to puke everywhere. As a result of my puking stories, I know that there's no such thing as a high bottom and low bottom. You know, because of my puking. Everything's a gift, you know. Because I'm a puker. See? I've been to Buckingham Palace. Twice I've been to Buckingham Palace. Twice I did what I do and puked on the Queen's lawn. Not once, twice. Right on the Queen's lawn. When I escaped from England in February the 1st, 1978, I arrived in New York and I was dating a black chick. Then she was singer for Tom Jones, and her mum and her family lived in Jamaica, Queens. Anybody here from Jamaica, Queens? No? Don't blame you. Anyway, Jamaica, Queens, and we went, we did, got loaded, and we went out to her mum's house one day, and I was having a picnic, and guess what I did on her mum's lawn? Puked right on her mum's lawn. See, so there's no such thing as high bottom and low bottom. This disease don't know or care. I've puked on the Queen's lawn, and I've puked on a lawn in Queens. It didn't matter where the hell I was, man. No, because I'm a puker. See, you guys are a sick bunch. My favourite part of this book at the moment, today's favourite page, is 132. You ever read 132? Anybody read this book, by the way? It's a good idea. Bottom of 132, look what it says. So we think cheerfulness and laughter make for usefulness. Outsiders are sometimes shocked when we burst into merriment over a seemingly tragic experience out of the past. But why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and been given the power to help others. What a gift. What a gift. Recovered and been given the power to help others. Now you guys, sick bunch like you, you know what I'm talking about, laughing at seemingly tragic experiences out of the past. My mum don't. My mum don't understand me like you guys do. She don't laugh at seemingly tragic experiences out of the past. She don't. I was just on tour and I walked into my mum's house. She still lives in Northwest London. I walked in and I said, Mum, 12 years sober. She said, so is the cat. And she didn't used to think it was funny when I puked on the cat. I don't know whether you've ever puked on a cat. It's really weird. You're all like shit-faced and you're... God damn it. And you look at it like that and you go, shit. I don't remember reading that. And then it would get up and run off. And I never ate a diced carrot in my life. I never ever had a diced carrot. Yet every time I puked there the bugger was. Look. My mum don't laugh at that shit. She don't relate. She don't relate. You guys do, see? You guys do. That's why I come here, Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what we got here. We got a common solution to our problem. That's what it's all about. Starts with the first step. I don't know about you, but, you know, everybody who I see relapse, over and over, and without exception, when I ask them about the first step, they ain't even got a screwed up idea over it. Have no idea about the first step. It's a shame. And you know what? We're not telling guys. We're not telling the new folk coming along what it's all about with this first step, that powerlessness. See, we've got to do that. We've got to tell that. Like two alcoholics sat down like Bill and Bob. Now we're celebrating 60 years of our birthday, Alcoholics Anonymous' birthday, June 10th, 1935. That's when they... consider universally is our birthday. But you know what? I don't think that that's the reason that I celebrate June 10th, 1935 as our birthday. I got another reason for doing it. And it's kind of special. Where long we got here? If I get carried away, you can send out for breakfast, I'll tell you. I can't even see this shitty watch. I can't even see it. What time is it? 20 past one. All right. You know, Bill and Bob came together and we consider our birthday June 10th, 1935, because it was the day that the last drink that Dr. Bob had was on June 10th, 1935. You can check this shit out. It's not like my opinion or nothing. It's all there. And Bill Wilson gave him that drink, you know, and he never drank again until he died. But I don't think that that's the reason that we celebrate AA's birthday. I don't think that's the reason why this thing took off like it did. I don't think that that's right at all. Because Dr. Bob did something on June 10th, 1935 that he'd never ever done before. See? Now, we know that this is a program of action. Now, Bill, he discovered that he had to abstain from all alcohol in any way, shape or form. That's the only way. And he discovered that, you know, he did that best when he was working with another drunk. See? So when he gets to Akron, and we can fast forward a little bit because he's in Akron and he's, you know, in a bit of anxiety about his sobriety, and he gets in touch with Father Tunks, the priest or whatever he was, vicar or whatever that guy was, and he puts him in touch with Henrietta Siebeling, who lines up a meeting with Dr. Bob for the following day because he was too drunk that day. because it was Mother's Day, and he was drunk, Dr. Bob was. And so they line up a meeting for Bill Wilson to meet Dr. Bob. See? Now, Dr. Bob is talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous. He's almost revered by us as a saintly dude. You know, and I guess so now, but, you know, then he wasn't a saintly dude. Then he was a real alcoholic prick, is what he was. You know, Dr. Bob was an arrogant bugger, he was, you know what I mean? He was a professional man that had ruined his career. He was a family man, his family was like in tatters. Everything about him was in the shit. And he was an arrogant arsehole, that's what he was. Now, people don't like hearing that about Bob, but it's true. You know, he was a surgeon as well. Did you know that? He was a proctologist. Did you know that? He was a, you know that. It's all diagnosed. He was a butt doctor is what he was. You know. That's why he later became such an expert on arseholes like us. Anyway, he was a butt doctor. And Bill was a shyster broker is really what he was. He was a crook, really. That's why if ever I get out there and start thinking I'm something special, I just come back to what we started with. A shyster broker and a butt doctor, you know what I mean? It's true. Anyway, Bill and Bob get together, you know, and we have it documented that this Dr. Bob graciously consented to grant Bill 15 minutes of his precious time, arrogant prick. See, and that we know turned into a 6-hour conversation, and they was enthralled, you know. But, you know, Bob didn't stay sober after that. He carried on drinking. He started off the conversation, really, by saying, look, I've been spoken to by the top people in the world about my drinking. He said, what do you think you can do about my drinking? And, of course, Bill, he replied in those classic words, I ain't come here to do nothing about your drinking. I've come here to do something about mine. See? And that's what we do, don't we? We come here to share with each other experience, strength and hope. See? And that's what happened. But Bob didn't stay sober from then. Bill did, but Bob didn't. Because Bill was an action man. See? He was out buzzing. He was out grabbing drunks off of bar stools like we heard tonight. Not Bob. He was a praying fool, was Bob. Bob was praying up the wazoo, Bob. Bob was already a 2.5-year member of the Oxford group that Bill had only just found out about. See? But it didn't do him no good. And I've got news for you. You can't wish, want, hope, pray or intend yourself sober. It don't work. If you think praying's enough, I've got news for you. Lock yourself in a closet next time you're hungry and pray for a chili dog. See what the fuck happens then. Yeah. No. We got to get into actions as we pray, not just like, do that. That's what Bob did, see, and he goes out and he goes on one of those lecture tours and he comes back drunk as a sack. They've got to peel him off the bloody platform and get him back. Anyway, he's got this operation to do and he's got all the jitters. He's got all the bloody jitters, you know, because him and Bob were pillheads as well, you know. They weren't just alcoholics. Read it in the book. You want to know where... Look, page 7, just for a little bit of fun here. Look, page 7. A doctor came with a heavy sedative. Next day found me drinking both gin and sedative. What a bloody surprise. This combination soon landed me on the rocks. The combination of booze and drugs landed him on the rocks. People feared for my sanity, so did I. I could eat little or nothing when drinking. I was 40 pounds underweight. Oh dear. Pillhead is what he was. Later on in the book it says maybe you can get a doctor to prescribe heavy sedatives or morphine to taper off. I took sedatives and morphine, never bloody tapered me off. So here's Bob, he's got all the shakes and the jitters, because he's like all strung out from the night before and hungover, and he's got to do this operation on some poor bastard's butt. Can you imagine? Put your proctol up here. My hands are shaking, but I'll be careful of the family jewels. He was shaking so bad, Bill gave him a beer. Here, steady your nerves, pal. The hair of the dog that bit you. thank you very much. Carried on. Done. Bill went back to Dr. Bob's home to wait for him. When he gets back there, Anne's there, of course, and they wait for Bob, and he don't show up. Bob don't show up. And they think the worst. They think that, you know, Bill's had the doctor's opinion, knows that it's a twofold disease, obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. He thinks that the beer's given him, triggered off the obsession of the phenomenon of craving. And Bob's off on another run. They sit there and expect the worst. This is all documented, and it comes up to 12 o'clock that night, and Dr. Bob arrives home. Dr. Bob arrives home, and he's stone cold sober. And they were amazed. They were amazed. It's June 10th, 1935. They're amazed. He said, God, what happened? We thought the worst. We thought that you'd gone off on another spree. Where have you been? He said, you know what? He said, the operation went so well. He said, and I got to thinking about what we're going to do around here. And he said, and I went around all over Akron, he said, and I've been running around Akron all day. He said, I'm exhausted, he said, because I've been trying to make some amends and some apologies for some of the harm that I've done some of them people. He said, and like, I'm exhausted, he said, but I feel great and I ain't had a drink all day. And you know what? I think that's why we celebrate AA's birthday on June the 10th, 1935. Not because it was Dr. Bob's last drink, though that's important. But it was the first day he got up off his fat, lazy, alcoholic butt and did something. In other words, he got into actions. That's what he did. And he never drank again from that day till he died. See? And that's what this is all about, actions. A-C-T-I-O-N. Any change to improve our nature. And that's what we got to do. Change. C-H-A-N-G-E. Choosing honesty allows new growth every day. That's what we got to do. See? We ain't here to sit around on our butt. And that's what you guys taught me to do. And I didn't know nothing about that. I don't know nothing about nothing. You guys had to teach me everything. I don't know shit. You said, Mick, you got to stop doing that shit. I said, what do you mean stop? He said, we got to stop. We got a disease called alcoholism. We got to stop doing that. I said, what do you mean stop? He said, we're sicker than other people. S-T-O-P. Sicker than other people. That's what it means. Or sicker than others, patrol, and you're a member. I said, really? He said, yeah. He said, well, how do I stop? He said, we stop by got granted a gift. Gift? What do you mean gift? G-I-F-T, God is forever there. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. What kind of a gift? I like gifts. Gift of sobriety. Well, what's he there for? He's there to help. Remember the book says, we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling and powerful. Without help, it's too much for us. Too much for us. H-E-L-P, his ever-loving presence. Oh, wow. Oh, well, how'd you get this gift? Where'd you get this gift from? G-I-F-T-S, get it from the steps. Oh, is that right? Yeah, you get it from the steps. Oh, man. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, I don't know about all this bloody spiritual heavenly shit. I can't be so bloody heavenly that I'm no earthly good. No, that's why we got a program. Program? What do you mean program? P-R-O-G-R-A-M. People relying on God, relaying a message. That's what the program is. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh. Well, how do I find out about this program? How do I like? You've got to want it. You've got to ask for it. Ask, what do you mean ask? A-S-K. Ask saving kit. That's what your ask saving kit is. You've got to ask. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, who shall I ask? Try a sponsor. Sponsor? What do you mean sponsor? S-P-O-N-S-O-R. Sober person offering newcomers suggestions on recovery. That's what a sponsor is. What shall I ask him? What's in the book? Book? What book? This book, the big book. Big book? What do you mean big book? B-I-G-B-O-O-K. Believing in God beats our old knowledge. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh, well, what's in the book? The steps. Steps? What do you mean steps? STEPS. Solution to every problem, sober. That's what the steps are. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. Oh. Have I got to do the steps? Of course you've got to do the steps. Well, why have I got to do the steps, for heaven's sake? Because if you try and quit drinking and using and don't replace it with the steps, you go crazy, you go nuts. Nuts? What do you mean, nuts? N-U-T-S. Not using the steps. That's what nuts is. Oh, man. Does everybody work the steps? No, not everybody works the steps. Oh, well, why are you picking on me? Why have I got to work the bloody steps if everybody don't got to work them? Why have I got to work? Oh, you don't have to work the steps. Well, what happens if I don't work the steps? I'll go down to San Diego, see them folk down there not working the steps. Oh, well, how will I know they are? Oh, don't worry, you'll see them. How will I know them? Oh, you'll see them walking around full of fear. Fear? What do you mean, fear? F-E-A-R. Frantic efforts to appear recovered. You'll see them. Don't worry. Oh, no, I don't want to be full of fear. I ain't work the steps. Oh, do you work the steps? Of course I work the steps. Well, why do you work the steps? So I'll stay sober. Sober? What do you mean, sober? S-O-B-E-R. Son of a bitch. Everything's real. That's what sober is. Oh, is that right? Yeah, that's right. I wrote that son of a bitch, everything's real, you know, when I was a year and a half. This is a bit of fun. And a few years ago, I was about 8.5 years sober, something happened and I wrote another word for sober. S-O-B-E-R became staying off booze, enjoying recovery. Get any difference there? What do you want to be sober for anyway? Why do I want to be sober? I'll tell you why I want to be sober. Because I came here a hopeless dope fiend. Now I'm a dopeless hope fiend. That's why I want to be sober. Oh, man. Hope, what do you mean, hope? H-O-P-E. Happy our program exists. Who's happy they got a program here? No shit, yeah. Maybe H-O-P-E means hearing other people's experiences, like the beautiful book says. The book says, book don't say opinion, strength and hope. No. I hate it when people get up here and say, everything you hear from me is strictly my own opinion. I feel like saying, shove it up your tush. I don't like opinions. Hearing other people, that's what we do here, isn't it? That's what this is all about. This is what the whole thing's all about, is one drunk coming together with another drunk, sharing their experience, strength and hope in order to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's all there is, really. There ain't nothing else but that, really. There's nothing else other than that. That's what it all amounts to, two drunks coming together. That's what the book and everything, you know, to reach a power greater than thyself, other than and outside of myself. Because I thought that coming to meetings would keep me sober. Yeah, I thought that getting commitments would keep me sober. Reading the book would keep me sober. Working the steps would keep me sober. Having a sponsor, sponsoring other people, all that stuff would keep me sober. It sounded like that's what you were saying, but it wasn't. All of what all that stuff was doing was leading me to a power greater than and outside of myself that would keep me sober. I'm not staying sober, I'm being kept sober. See, I can't do that in and of myself. I'm powerless over this disease. What makes me powerless over it? I'm powerless over it because it makes me do shit that I don't want to do, including it. We got a lot of lip-flapping shit that we say around here, you know. We say shit like, don't drink and use no matter what. When we tell a newcomer to not drink and use no matter what, we're telling him to do something that it's impossible for him to do. A newcomer in and of himself cannot not drink and use no matter what. We got to help him, guide him, give him our experience. Can't just tell him to go out and do that. That's what happens. He goes out there and then he can't do what we tell him we're doing in here and he thinks it don't work for him. See? We say things like, we're not disturbing you down there, are we? I choose not to drink today. So what a doozy that is. That ain't in the book. In fact, the opposite to that is in the book. The book on page 24, if you want to check it out, says something else. It says here, look, I'll show you what it says right here. Do you want to know what it says? I'll tell you what it says. Look. The fact is that most alcoholics, for reasons yet obscured, have lost the power of choice in drink. Our so-called willpower has become practically non-existent. We are unable at certain times to bring into our consciousness with sufficient force the memory of the suffering and humiliation of even a week or a month ago. We are without defense against the first drink. I choose not to drink today. How can I do that? I can't do that. I will drink and use no matter what. Not that I won't, I will. I can't just choose not to. Just say no. Where the hell does that come from? Just say no. I don't even know where that shit comes from. It ain't in the book. Nancy Reagan, fuck her too. Yeah. Don't drink and use no matter what. Just say no. I can't do that. Just to tell a guy like me to just say no is like saying to that homeless dude on the corner, hey, homeless dude, just get a house. Get a house, homeless dude. If I could get a house, I wouldn't be homeless, you prick. No, and if I could just say no, I wouldn't bloody be an addict either. You know, can't do that. Got to come here, be among you people the ones that know, not me, my mum don't know, you. Those folk out there don't know. That's why I love to wrap up these little talks with a couple of little stories. Hey George, good to see you mate, bloody hell, I love you back bro. Where's the other man, where's Dan? Dan don't seem the same unless he's next to George. I love telling the story of the two dudes driving across the desert. Two dudes driving across the desert, baking hot day, Jeep breaks down. Screwed, don't know what to do. What are we going to do? I don't know. What are you doing? I don't know. Just then they see a mountain lion sneak round a rock looking real mean and hungry. Oh, crikey, look at this. What are we going to do? What are you doing? I'm putting on my running shoes, man. Putting on your running shoes? What the hell for? Everybody knows you can't outrun a mountain lion. He said, I ain't got to outrun the lion. I just got to outrun you. See, they got to like save their own arse, but they ain't got our help in each other's shit, have they? Yeah. Now, if you want to know what the solution to the problem is, it really helps to know what the real problem is, and it's in this beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. See? That's why I love telling the story, the White Rabbit story. It's not my story; I got it from Clinton, but I'd tell it better than him anyway, so I'll tell it with you. The two neighbours. Two neighbours living next door to each other, always fussing and fighting. And they get this kind of truce going, right? And they get this truce going, and one day the little terrier dog of one of the neighbours comes in, and it's got the next door neighbour's white rabbit in its mouth. And it's all dead and bloody. He said, oh shit, what are we going to do now? Just as we're getting like, aha, delusionary thinking kicks in. Like the beautiful book says, solution to the problem. Ha ha. Snatches the rabbit off the dog, washes it all clean, gets a hairdryer and blow dries it all fluffy dry, sneaks in next door's yard, opens up the cage, throws the rabbit in, snaps the cage closed and sneaks back home. Whew. Well, come the weekend, he sees his neighbour working in the yard. He thinks, I'll go out and have a word. So he does. Goes out and says to his neighbour, hi neighbour. His neighbour said, oh hi. Well, you know the dude's got to be one of us, because he can't leave well enough alone. He said, how's the rabbit? Dude said, funny thing happened with the old rabbit. He said, it died here last week and I buried it up the end of the garden. But I see it's back in its cage now. See, so if you want to know the solution, it really helps to know what the real deal is, and it's right here in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. That's why I love it so much. I love being a part of this deal so much. I love it. I love being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a sober, clean member. And I got a news for you. Look, if there's anybody in the room tonight wondering whether they is or whether they isn't a real alcoholic or not, an alcoholic as described in our beautiful book, alcoholic of our kind, it says. Now, I know I'm an alcoholic of our kind. Do you know why? And I now tell you something else. I've learned that you've either got to stand for something or you fall for everything. Now, if you're wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, here's a little clue. You want a little clue? Here's a little clue. You better not have laughed in here tonight. Because if you've laughed in here tonight, hey Jim, good to see you, mate. If you've laughed in here tonight, you may have caught this disease. Because you catch it in rooms like this, you do know that, don't you? I was an alcoholic till I came here. And they say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick bastard like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. Because I don't get through to no well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. You people, my people laugh at my shit. You know, I got to take a minute here to just tell you what this deal is about. Our personal relationships with other people are the cause of nearly all our woes, including our alcoholism. It's in the beautiful 12 and 12. Our relationships with other people. You want to hear my latest word for relationship? You want to hear a word for relationship?
Yeah.
R-E-L-A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P. Relationship. Anybody here do well at relationships? R-E-L-A-T-I-S-O-N-H-I-P, right? Real exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. This year I haven't been with anybody the whole year, and I've been working on the picker, because I got a broken picker, you know what I'm saying? I don't pick very healthy people. I ain't very healthy. So this year I've been doing that. But, you know, through this program we get to do things that are remarkable, and I've had some remarkable things and achievements, I guess you'd call it, and some of those things I've been all over, and I've been to the White House a couple of times. I've been to the Capitol building. I've got some friends up there on Capitol Hill, and they've got 18 meetings a week up on Capitol Hill. And you know, and I've had some privileges up there. And you know what? I sat in the speaker's chair. They took me down on the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives one time. And I was sitting in the chair. You know the big chair that you see on the TV and all that? And I sat down, I was looking out over the floor, and you know, I'm a certified insane. I come out of nut wards for the criminally insane on 5-point restraint, puking straight up. You know what I'm saying? And here I am sitting in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives. And I got into a laughing fit, man. I mean, I just cracked up laughing, you know. I'm like, whoa, and I'm laughing. And I'm laughing so hard, I slipped off the chair and fell on the floor. There's a couple of congressmen there. I said, what, mate, what the hell are you doing? What are you laughing at? I said, oh, you'll never understand. I said, you'll never understand. How'd you come from where I come from to sit in the speaker's chair? Like, you know, holy shit. I mean, he said, what do you mean? I said, well, like, you know, I'm insane. I mean, I come out of nut wards. I mean, I'm certified insane. How does an insane person get to sit in the speaker's chair? He said it happens all the time. I thought it was something deal, you know. And you know what? They took me up on the Capitol building, up on the dome, and they flew the American flag there, and they folded it up in that way that they're special. So the way you do the stars and stripes there, and you fold it in that triangular fashion. I see them do it at Kennedy's funeral, and they had that triangular shape like that, and they put that flag, the stars and stripes, and they put that flag in a glass-fronted cabinet, and they put a brass plaque on that front, in the front of that glass cabinet, and they, on the brass plaque, it said, "This flag flew over America to celebrate Mickey Bush's birthday." And they got that, and they sent that off to my mum in England. And My mum still lives there. Hey, mate, how you doing? And they sent that off to her. She's got that on her piano. My mum's got that on her piano, that thing, and she's immensely proud of that. She's immensely proud of me. And I'll send her a tape here, and I'll let her know what I'm doing. And you know what? She's 80 years of age, and she's in the twilight of her years, really, I guess. And, you know. And she's just an old lady who has her friends come round, and they eat scones and cups of tea in the day, and they chit chat and they talk about their kids and their grandkids, and her friends say to her, like, Mary, tell us some more stories about Mickey. What's Mickey doing now? Where is he? What's he doing? You know, has he just come back from Australia? And holy shit, he's just done a tour. Where is he now? What's it? And I'll send her this tape, and she'll say he's in San Diego sharing with a bunch of drunks down there. And you know, they'll say, oh, Mary, you must be so proud. And she is. And her chest goes out, and she's proud. Because she loves me. And she's always loved me. And I never knew that. I never knew how to receive love. I never had to do all that. How does that happen? How does an old lady get to be, you know, how does an old lady get to be happy in her later years through, you know, some amenses that I get to do and show her? How does that happen? How does that old lady get to, you know, enjoy her kid and her son sober? I never knew how to do that. Her friends never used to say, tell us some more stories about Mickey in America, Mary. They used to say to her, are they going to let your Mickey out the nut ward for Christmas this year, Mary? And she would hurt and she would die of shame, you know, because she loved me and stuff. So how do you get to do that? Get to do that by coming here, sharing and learning from you guys. Get to do it by having somebody guide you, like my sponsor. My sponsor's a judge. My sponsor's actually a justice. He's higher than a judge. I'm a bloody bank robber. I'm an illegal person. How does that happen? See? My sponsor gave me a 12-year cake. I put my arms around him and hugged him and thanked him. I never thanked a judge for nothing in my life. He teaches me shit. He teaches me shit opposite to what I am. I was doing a talk like this in Phoenix, a lot of big hall, much bigger than this, and there were some kids running around like these bloody kids making noise here. And I got all agitated like I've gotten tonight a couple of times. And that particular time I looked over and I went, shut them bloody kids up for Christ's sake. You know what? And some people were amused, but some people were offended, and I didn't really give a shit either way. But you know what? I was watching my sponsor speak. He's a great speaker. And I saw some kids running around the hall when he was speaking. And I was watching him because I know him. I knew he wasn't going to let it go for very long. But he teaches me opposite to what I am. And all of a sudden he said to the group that night, he said, look, he said, not everybody who gets to Alcoholics Anonymous gets this thing, you know. He said, perhaps these little orphan children that are here, he said, won't get this thing. He said, they must be orphans, mustn't they? Surely if they had parents, their parents wouldn't allow them to act like this. And those kids got snapped up and everybody... Just want to change. Just want to change. Got to change by coming here. I'll leave you with a little gift here. Look, you know why they call this book Alcoholics Anonymous? I'll tell you why they call it Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we have to stay sober, carry the message. Stay sober, carry the message. That's what our primary purpose has to be. That's what this book is all about. You want to know why this book is called Alcoholics Anonymous? One of our three legacies in Alcoholics Anonymous, recovery, unity, service, right? That's why AAs are us, by the way. Did you know that? Alcoholics Anonymous, Recovery, Unity, Service. Get it? AAs are us. Perhaps you've got to be a limey for that one, I don't know. But here's why it's called Alcoholics Anonymous. Look. A-L-C-O-H-O-L-I-C-S. Alcoholics. A-N-O-N-Y-M-O-U-S. Alcoholics Anonymous. This is what it really means. A life centered on helping others lives in complete sobriety. Actions, not our names, yield maintenance of unity and service. That's all there is. That's all there is. That's all there is. There ain't no more than that. That's all there is. I tell you what, there's some folk from all over the country and all over the world here tonight, and I'll give you my phone number. It's 818 area code 760-1346. And I love getting your calls. And I need your calls. And I don't know a better way of ending these little talks than to give back to you what you gave me on January the 15th, 1983. You said, "We love you, keep coming back, and I do you. God bless."